This is Radio Boston. I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Filmmaker Jay Craven believes that a sense of place matters. He's from Vermont, teaches film studies at Marlborough College in that state, and makes films about and set in Vermont. His latest is Northern Borders, his fourth based on the novels of the Vermont writer Howard Frank Mosher.
The movie begins as Austin Kittredge, played by 12-year-old Seamus Davy Fitzpatrick, is sent to live on the farm of his grandparents. They're played by Bruce Dern and Genevieve Bujold, who barely speak to each other.
Perhaps Mr. Kittredge can put the newspaper down. Might occur to him not to set a bad example for a boy.
Austin, ask your grandma if she'd pass the butter if it's not too much trouble.
Ask him not to call me grandma. I'm a mother and a grandmother, not a grandma.
Northern Borders is part a coming-of-age story as Austin learns about his family's secrets. The film is being screened tonight at the Woods Hole Film Festival on Cape Cod. And director Jay Craven, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Anthony.
Jay, you've spoken a lot about the importance of time and place in particular in your films, and you're committed to making films about Vermont. Tell me why.
Well, it's where I am. And my connection with Howard Frank Mosher made sense because he's also from the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, where I am. I also loved his stories because they resembled Westerns.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised by a Texas grandmother who took me to Westerns and Tennessee Williams pictures when I was a kid. So these larger-than-life characters, sort of archetypal themes, but a detailed sense of place where you sort of burrow in, try to find different perspectives that might be sort of culturally relevant and some of them subtle, but connecting to larger themes, and I think really resonating contemporaneously as well.
You know, you mentioned the idea of Westerns, and I've heard your films described as Easterns in a way. And what I like is this idea of how the characters reflect the landscape around them in the same way that these bigger-than-life characters in Westerns do. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, what is it about the New England setting, the Vermont setting, that defines these characters that you're so drawn to?
Well, in the way that the Western, one of the differences is, I mean, Westerns deal with cultural elements. They deal with sort of complex, sometimes larger-than-life character, but they also exist in places where there's not much sense of history, there's not much sense of community. The West was sort of being newly settled. Mm. When you start dealing with a New England issue, you do have a cultural history. You also have a sense of community that's been settled for a while. You have the importance of family. Those are other issues. So you take some of those Western elements, but you bring into it distinctively New England elements, along with a distinctively New England landscape, where the land really does play a role. If you live there, you start to feel it. I mean, I've shot two of my films basically within 3 miles of where I live. And those settings speak to me and just mean a lot. And I think that, you know, because New England has been here for so long, you walk the back roads and you have a sense of what went before and you have a sense of what else is out there. And it seems large and sort of unfathomable, but palpable and present.
Mm. You make films very much outside of the Hollywood system. And I want to talk about how you made this film in a second. But first of all, how does Hollywood treat and depict places like Vermont? In other words, what are you doing that the Hollywood system misses?
When Hollywood does it frequently, you know, rural people in general are sort of caricatured or stereotyped. They often are background. The place is a background. The characters are background to foreground characters that are carrying out a more conventional narrative that is sort of familiar. If you think about a picture, you know, Funny Farm or Me, Myself, and Irene, frequently it's comedy, mm-hmm. even. We try to work comedy into our pictures, too, and sort of Howard Mosher is a wonderful, you know, master of irony, I think, and there is humor in the work. But it's rooted in character and place. It's not sort of laid over or made fun at the expense of local people.
Well, I want to play another clip from Northern Borders. So this is Austin's birthday. His father and two of his aunts come to the farm for dinner, and the patriarch, Austin Sr., played by Bruce Dern, manages to offend just about all of his children. The dinner sort of breaks up, and afterward, 10-year-old Austin comes into his grandfather's workshop. And let's just listen for a second.
Brought you some food.
They've been talking about me down there? hashing over my shortcomings?
After you left, everyone vanished but Cleopatra. I should probably go. Dad and Nefertiti are going to read stories.
If they're not all out of here by noon chores, I'm going to read them something, and it's not going to be a story.
Well, we'll probably be out of here. Dad wants to get home before dark. After breakfast, I was going to open some birthday presents.
I never exchanged presents with anyone in my life. You believe that?
I do. I gotta go, Grandpa.
Maybe we can go hunting someday.
So I like this relationship between these two. And in particular, I want to talk to you about Bruce Dern character, the grandfather. And this sort of gets back to this idea of New England landscape and setting. He's tough. He's flinty. He's rocky. I mean, he seems to sort of come out of this landscape just about more than anyone else in film that you could imagine.
Well, I think of a family that lived near me where when I first moved to Vermont, the old patriarch of that family, I helped build a foundation for his barn, and he was in his 70s and had a very steely relationship with his wife. And his second-born son was a good friend of mine who was largely rejected by the family because they believed in primogeniture.
Oh, boy.
And he couldn't really get the time of day. And, of course, it was the older boy who was going to take over the farm, and even though the younger boy wanted to take over the farm. You know, New Englanders have some traits that we all know because we live here, and, you know, these characters are not, the good guys are not all good, the bad guys are not all bad. That's part of what you try to do as a filmmaker in the first place. But Kittredge is a tough character, and he is unrelenting, and you can see why the relationship with his wife has ended up where it is. But he has, I think, some layers, and he does, I think one of the themes in the picture, ironically, is sort of love. And through the boy's presence in the life of both his grandmother and the grandfather, he doesn't bring them together, but he does tap into what are probably pent-up reservoirs in each of them that are able to express something.
Yeah, there's a scene in the movie where, I mean, it's interesting you say, you talk about love. The grandfather doesn't use the word love, but for 50 years, he and his wife have abided one another.
She will never be Mira. And I'll never be the fella that she wanted to spend her life with. But we've abided each other. We don't agree on much. But we've lasted 50 years.
That sort of bowled me over in a way.
And that's seen as a good thing.
That's right.
And some people, you say, well, you know.
That's the great question. Is it a good thing or a bad thing? Whatever it is, it is.
It is. That's right. And sometimes that's where you lay your claim.
Mm. Well, let me ask you about how you made this film. Your crew was made up largely of college students from around New England. Tell me why you settled on this production model.
Well, I've made, this is my sixth feature film overall, and I've wrestled and wrangled with the film distribution business for that entire time. And so the model of having made $2 million feature films, which is nothing compared to Hollywood, but still a lot of money when you're raising it hand to hand in Vermont and New England, which I have done, it just was not sustainable. And so the Marlborough College president, Ellen Lovell, put out a call to faculty, who's got a new idea for what we can do given the challenges small liberal arts colleges are facing? And I said, let's make a movie. And, you know, surprisingly, she said, it took her 8 months, but she said, okay. So I give her credit that at a time where a lot of small colleges are sort of looking at distance learning or online learning or, you know, low residency, that she said, no, let's go the other direction, intensified learning. Mm. So I set out, I offered free film workshops at a half a dozen colleges and got invitations from four or five of them. Yeah, come on, show a behind-the-scenes documentary from your last film, talk about your program. And they were New England schools. It's Wellesley, Mount Holyoke, well, Sarah Lawrence is in New York, BU. Students came forward wanting to participate to play a substantial role on the crew, working alongside professional mentors for an entire semester. And so we had young people playing roles, costume designer, a location manager, script supervisor, camera operators. They were being asked to assume positions of huge responsibility as peers as part of a creative community, really, with professionals. 20 professionals, 34 students, let's make a film.
It's amazing. And I have to ask you, what did they bring that was surprising and good?
Well, they bring passion, first of all. They bring a fresh perspective, a goodwill, a generosity of spirit, frankly, towards each other and, you know, towards the entire project. And because they had been involved in many cases, even for 4 or 5 months before they arrived, where they were commenting on the script and offering ideas, they were totally immersed in the detail of the story and the script and the characters, so that we created a transparent production, so that literally we were on speakerphone when negotiating a deal with an actor or, you know, planning a benefit or looking at a budget issue. For many of them, you know, through the evaluations, they really found it transformative to play a substantial role in something larger than themselves as part of a community, a collaboration.
So they get the experience, of course, which is hugely valuable. And one of the things you got was a sort of new model in the independent film production world. Is this a model that you'd want to repeat?
We're planning to repeat it, you know.
It worked, in other words.
It worked. It was great. I mean, you know, the college puts up half the budget. My nonprofit, Kingdom County Productions, raises the other half. So there's still ongoing work to fundraise, and we still are paying back some of that from this 100-town tour. But it's the closest model I've found for sustainability, and we're planning to do it next spring again, whole semester, based at Marlborough College for the first half, and then going to the Cape and Islands, working in Nantucket, shooting some scenes in Martha's Vineyard, whatever, and I'm excited about it.
Well, Jake Raven, good luck, and when you get that film done, come back and talk to us about it, please.
Thank you.
Jay Craven is a film director and professor of film studies at Marlborough College in Vermont. His new film is called Northern Borders, which will be screened tonight at the Woods Hole Film Festival. And by the way, if you're on the Cape, you can join me for a conversation with Jay Craven and Academy Award winner Ernest Thompson, who wrote the play and screenplay on Golden Pond. That's tonight at 7 at the Woods Hole Film Festival. For more information and to see a behind-the-scenes documentary that Jay Craven's students made about the film, go to our website, radioboston.org.
And that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Carrie Goldberg.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Have a great weekend. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.